Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 23rd of Tishrei, which outside of Israel is the Ish Simchas Torah, but inside Israel is just Ishruchag, just the day after Yom Tov, and therefore a day like any other day. So the Tzitz Eliezer, in volume 14, Simon Ayin, chapter 70, or responsive number 70, has a tshuva that he wrote on the 23rd of Tishrei of Tavshin Lamed Tet, which would be 1978. And he writes it to Avram Steinberg, who was one of these doctors in Israel. There were a few at the time living along with the Eliezer, who were very involved both in Torah and in medicine. So Dr. Steinberg asks the Eliezer about people who can't, patients in the hospital, ill people who are ill, who can't eat anymore through their mouth. It's hard for them. And so they have a opening in their stomach. Now, he doesn't ask about IVs. It's possibly because an IV is only liquid, and therefore this question wouldn't arise. So you have some people who they have an opening in their stomach or a tube that goes straight into their stomach, and so the food doesn't ever go down the person's throat. It goes straight into their stomach. So there, his question is, what happens to the prohibition of basar b'chalav, of meat and milk? So let's remember that the prohibition of meat and milk applies to eating it, applies to cooking it, and applies to getting any benefit from it. So that's a problem and a challenge for people who want to like own franchises of McDonald's and stuff like that. There gets to be an issue there of whether or not the cheeseburgers qualify as basar b'chalav. There's all sorts of issues that come up. These are complicated issues because basar b'chalav, it's different from many other prohibitions, is prohibited in eating and in cooking, so the preparation is a problem. That's why people who want to go to chef, to culinary school, often have a challenge, because in culinary schools, you're required to cook what they're cooking, and that means they very often cook meat and milk together. And it's not only that the Jew can't eat it, that you can't cook it, because that's part of the prohibition of basar b'chalav. So that gets complicated. But in our case, you have this worry. And the more important worry here was going to be the question of benefiting from it. If we put in meat and milk at the same time into the tube, or very close to each other, are they not in the stomach together, and therefore aren't they mixing together, and therefore isn't there a problem of getting benefit from basar b'chalav? So the question is, do you have to wait? Between the times, you'd have to wait, you know, the same 3 or 5 or 6 hours that the patient would have waited had he or she been eating it on their own through their mouth, or not. So that's the question. And the reason why the question comes up is because it's not going down the patient's throat. So is there perhaps, Dr. Steinberg is asking, a particular importance to food going down one's throat? And the answer, I think, will probably surprise many of us, which is, I think, why I must have chosen this back when I was choosing the response to do for, this day. So here's the Tzitz Eliezer's answer. He points out in the Gemara in Chulin on Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Bet on page 103b, there is a machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have a dispute as to if somebody eats something prohibited. Rabbi Yochanan thinks that what matters is what's called Hana'at Girono, that the throat has some enjoyment of it, meaning he goes down his throat and he benefits and he enjoys it and he experiences that enjoyment. And Reish Lakish says, Achilat Me'av, it has to be, it's the stomach's experience of it, it's the digestion of it, that's the important issue. So I think, I could be wrong, but I think in Nafkamina, a difference would be, let's say the person eats it and then, you know, upchucks it, right? Or chews it, swallows it, and immediately gets rid of it somehow. So it never have achilat ma'av, the stomach never benefits from it. Rabbi Yochanan would say he's already liable, he's already violated the iser fully, and Reish Lakish would say not. Doesn't really matter for us so much because we rule according to Rabbi Yochanan. We follow Rabbi Yochanan. We generally do so in debates with Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and here we do so as well. The Rambam in the 14th chapter of Hilchos Makos Asuros says that a lachiyuv, the becoming liable, becoming responsible for having violated the Torah, happens to achanaat hagaron, a kezayit, an olive's worth of prohibited matter going down one's throat in a way that the throat enjoys and experiences it. So we don't have to worry, the Tzitzeleja says. We don't think that one becomes liable or culpable or having violated the Torah for hana'at me'ayim, for what goes on inside the stomach. As the Mishnah Melech says in Hilchos Ma'akos Asuros, and one of the results that it leads to is that let's suppose somebody wraps something prohibited in a sieve, in some kind of a cover, in a cover that makes sure that the item never touches the throat. So today, let's say you put something prohibited, pig, in saran wrap. I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm not saying it's allowed, but let's say somebody did it and then swallows it. So that would be patur. That would be not fully liable. You wouldn't have gotten the full prohibition or prohibition because the same way that we would say off if Seder night, somebody did that with matzah. Let's say somebody says, I so can't stand matzah. I have an idea. Before Pesach, I'm going to break up some matzahs into little pieces. I'm going to piece them in saran wrap, and I'll just swallow the saran wrap, and that way I'll never have to have any experience with the matzah, but it'll get in my stomach, and I'll have fulfilled the mitzvah. Now, I'm not sure. I think the saran wrap might not be good for you, so I'm not, certainly not recommending that for any health reasons. But aside from that, we don't think that the person has fulfilled their obligation. It is true that we don't require that one taste the matzah, right? So if somebody sticks matzah, actual matzah, not covered in saran wrap, not covered in anything, just the matzah itself, but puts it in their mouth and then swallows it without chewing it, you know, swallows it without tasting it. So there we hold that that works. And that worked because we don't require that the person be to'em ta'am matzah. We don't require that the person taste the taste of matzah. That's not an obligation. We require the person ingest matzah. But if the person wrapped it in something such that the matzah never touches the person's body, the inside of the person's throat, so that's not considered eating, and therefore he would not be yotze. He or she would not fulfill their obligation. If that's true, it's also true about Isurim, that if somebody wraps an Isur in something that should never touch their throat, not that it's recommended, but they would not be liable for the Isur. Now, as I'm saying, this is not in the tshuva, but I'm thinking about it. That theoretically could mean, let's suppose that the doctors wanted somebody to ingest something that wasn't kosher, that wasn't permissible, and they thought that would be good for them, but it wasn't life-threatening. Right? If it's life-threatening, then they can do it because they can do it. But let's say it's not life-threatening. So then, one, based on this, you'd obviously have to ask more questions and think about it more, but based on this, there's this idea that if you wrap it besif, so you never experience it, then let's say if you had a caplet, and what's inside the caplet is prohibited materials, this is the other saying, there's room to say that that doesn't count as having ingested the Isser at all, because as long as the caplet isn't prohibited, that is all that the throat experiences. So, but that's what he's saying here. For sure, that's what he's saying here. Whether or not he would apply it to pills and things like that, I'm not sure. To caplets, I'm not sure. But b'isurin, derachmana amar lo tochal, where the Torah says, don't eat it. If you wrap it in something such that it never touches the person's throat, then the person is not violated what the Torah said. Mishnah Melech brings another proof for this idea. There's in Hilchos She'ar Avot HaTumah, in the laws of Tumah and Tahara, ritual purity and impurity. This is an example for those who are paying attention and collecting six of them. There are many, many, many of them. It's going to be a very large collection. But this is an example of where these areas of halakha that we might think of as being not relevant until and unless we have a return to the Beit HaMikdash and a return to observing all these laws of ritual purity and impurity carefully. Here's an example where it has an effect on us today because it sheds light on the nature of eating in halakha, on the nature of what's considered an ingestion of food in what sense. So here too, if somebody wraps an amount of besar nevelat ha'of, so nevelat ha'of is a bird, a kosher bird, of ha'tahor, a kosher bird, that passed away without proper shkita, either died of natural causes or somebody killed it, but not in the proper shkita way. So it's not permissible to be eaten. Not only is it not permissible to be eaten, but there's a special halacha. The Torah says that if it passes down through your throat, you become tameh. You become ritually impure. So if somebody wraps that up in some kind of a protective material and swallows it, the person will be tahar. The person will not be ritually impure because it's had no contact with the throat. And the halacha is, in the case of nivlat ofa tahor, in the case of the carcass of a kosher bird, right, the non-shechted, the non-properly slaughtered kosher bird carcass, it only creates tumah in the throat. So there the truth is, you could say that's not the exact same thing. You could say there the Torah was the halakha's makbid, that cared very much about the throat. The more surprising examples are the other ones, I think, where matzah, even though you're not required to taste the matzah, nonetheless, we are assuming, the Mishmelech is assuming, that contact with the throat is necessary, and so too for prohibitions, the contact with the throat is necessary. And Tzitzit Ezra points out, v'kach sover b'shitut gam ha-minchas chinuch. Right, the Minchas Chinuch also agrees and feels that way about it. And the Minchas Chinuch adds, the Reish Lakish actually agreed to this point, that when Reish Lakish said you needed hana'at hemin'ayim, that you needed the stomach or the intestines to have enjoyed it or benefited from it, to have digested it, the Reish Lakish didn't mean that to the exclusion of the throat. Reish Lakish meant that in addition to the throat, meaning that the Minchas Chinuch is arguing the debate wasn't about what constitutes eating, it constitutes as what's the point at which a meaningful act of eating has been done. But even Reish Lakish, who had a later point, agreed that the process had to include the throat element of eating. And without the throat element of eating, that would not be considered eating, it would not be considered violating a prohibition, and therefore it wouldn't be anything. Minchas Chinuch, Tzitzit Ezra says, Minchas Chinuch adds that this would be true of Yom Kippur as well. Now, Yom Kippur you might have thought was different because the Torah says, L'kol ha'nefesh shelo t'uneh, any of soul that does not afflict itself. And therefore, we might have thought that it's an issue of not getting any sustenance that stops us from feeling bad, you know, from feeling like we're lacking in things. And it's called yituve data, that it helps us feel more settled and better. We might have thought that was the standard that we had to worry about. Nonetheless, says the Minchas Chinuch, says we need hana'at karon, we need that to go down the throat, and one would not be liable, one would not be chai for hana'at mi'ayim l'chud if it just went into one's intestines. So this is, as a Yom Kippur question, it's an interesting one, because that suggests, and I'm not saying what the Siddurs would have paskined, would have ruled in practice, that you'd have to check it out, and I haven't, but it opens the possibility for things like an IV, for sure, being much more acceptable than we might have thought for Yom Kippur. Now, I don't think, thank God, most of us are so desperate for relief on Yom Kippur that we would think to ourselves, oh, I'll put an IV for Yom Kippur. But if you have people, you know, who have some health issues and the doctor's going to worry or be concerned that they need to eat, and it might be that an IV would be a solution if they are very adamant or very concerned about violating Yom Kippur, right? So as you're saying, if it doesn't go down your throat, it's not the same thing. And then another area that comes up that I know people who do it today, and I'm not saying how Sisters would have ruled, I'm not saying what the ruling should be, but suppositories, right? There are people who take caffeine suppositories. For those who are unfortunately addicted to caffeine, I am opposed to addictions in almost all its forms. People who are addicted to caffeine will sometimes maybe use a caffeine suppository to get them their caffeine fix, even on Yom Kippur. So whether or not it's allowed, those are saying it is certainly not a full violation of it, because we require for that that it has to go down the garon, down the throat. Now, all of that would suggest that when it comes to milk and meat, we'd be okay. As long as it doesn't go down through one's mouth and throat, then you're okay. Except that you might have thought that milk and meat was slightly different. You might have thought milk and meat was worse, because in other prohibitions, you need what's called derech hana'ah. So there's a whole discussion in halacha that we're not going to be able to get into, but because I didn't have it prepared, not because we don't have the time, we're going to have time today. It's a very brief tshuva, but a very interesting one, and therefore worth doing, even if it means you have slightly less time than usual. I think there are probably enough days that I've gone a minute or two over time, that if I go on time by a bit, I'm just giving you back time that I've taken from you on other occasions. But feel free to let me know if you want to make sure to fill up my half hour every day. You can email me at grothst@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to work harder at doing that. In this case, I'm going to try it out this way and see what happens. So when it comes to milk and meat, you don't need derech achilatan. In Basar B'Cholav, you're chayev afilu shechlo k'derech hana'atan, because the pasuk never says achila, never says, speaks about eating. That's Gemara in Pesachim that says that, and the Rambam Paskins that way. So it says, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter because when we're chayev afilu shechlo k'derech hana'atan, that's nonetheless where it goes by the throat. It just means that it's not in the usual way of enjoying it, such as a rave davar mar betok derech. Let's say you put something bitter into the pot with the basar b'chalav. So in many isurim, in many prohibitions, that would mean it's not the usual way we would eat it. We wouldn't generally eat food that tastes bitter, and that might allow us not to be violating the full prohibition if we eat it. With basar b'chalav, even shelo derech hanatan is prohibited in that situation. But if it doesn't go through your throat, then it's not considered eating at all, and then it's not part of all of these isurim of achilat basar b'chalav, eating basar b'chalav, and then it says umutar, and it's allowed. So that's what I've been trying to dance around here. Here, at least, in terms of the basar b'chalav issue, we say if it doesn't go through your throat, it's allowed. It's hard for me to imagine that he would just completely allow, you know, IVs and suppositories and things like that and patches on Yom Kippur, but he does sound like he thinks that if it's not going through one's throat, then it's completely allowed. And then he says he saw Maharshut Maharsham, who was a Ukrainian acharon in the 19th century, had whose shoot was responsible, were well known. He held that when it came to Yom Kippur, if there were people who were going to have their food stuck directly into their stomachs in some way, whether that's considered part of eating Yom Kippur, and he said, even according to Shakasari had held that in Yom Kippur, what we're worried about, what was prohibited, is even if it's not derech achila, but the Maharsham still held, even according to Shagasari, who says it doesn't have to be derech achila, however you could do that. So swallowing it without eating it, or some other way that it would get in without it being considered derech achila. Nonetheless, he says that if it doesn't go down the throat, it's not anything related to eating, and therefore it wouldn't be included in the Yom Kippur prohibition. So the Maharsham at least seems to have held that way, lahalacha. And so too another shoot called Machaze Avram, who was written by the Avezdin of Brody. He was born in 1847 in Bukovina, Wikipedia, the Hebrew Wikipedia tells me. And then he was selected to be the Rav of Brody in 1904, but went to his job in 1907, Wikipedia tells me, because there was opposition in the community. So it's nice to know that it's not only in our times the Jews have fought among each other about various things. And he passed away in 1928 in Brody. And he has a shoot called Machzeh Avraham. I don't know if this matters to you at all, but it happens to be many years ago I read a book by Chaim Grada, which I think was called The Yeshiva. And one of the figures there was the author of a sefer called The Vision of Abraham, which I assume in Yiddish would have been Machzeh Avraham, which I think at the time somebody claimed was supposed to be based on the Chazon Ish, but I think here you have a man who actually wrote a book called Machzeh Avraham. In any case, I have no idea. But it's also interesting because this Machzeh Avraham was Rav Avraham Steinberg, and this tshuva is written to Dr. Avraham Steinberg. I don't think they're related. I have no reason to think they're related, but it is kind of interesting that Tzitzler chooses to quote this Shut Machzeh Avraham, that he also held that on Yom Kippur you're only liable for Hanaut Garon if it goes down your throat, and as long as it doesn't set your throat, you're putter in terms of Achila on Yom Kippur. That's not the same thing as allowed, but certainly that you're putter. Then he says once he's going through all this, he found that in the Shut Achiezer of Chaim Moser Grudzinski, he also takes for granted that on Yom Kippur and the Chasam Sofer also, he says that on Yom Kippur you need Achilat Garon, you need that it go down the one's throat, and without that it's not considered eating at all, and there's no chiyuv, he says. So if somebody sticks something straight into their intestines, there's no obligation, no liability whatsoever. And then he adds, the Achiezer adds, v'nira digam basar b'chala v'kilei hakerem techayev v'shelo k'der achilatan, that even in cases where the obligation, there's no necessity to be done derech achilatan in the way that it's usually eaten. So that's true of basar b'chal of meat and milk. It's also true of kilei hakerem, of when things have been planted together that shouldn't have been planted together, where you have grapes as well as two kinds of grains or two kinds of plants that have been planted together. So you don't need kilei achilatan, but the Achiezer says it's not as if it's just going into one's stomach is good enough. You don't need this, you don't have this necessity of kederach achilatan. Aval mikol makom, the Achiezer says, hanat grano l'chayev, you do need hanat garon. You do need it goes down when it's one's throat, because Yochan holds, you need hanat grano, makes a complete rule out of it in all prohibitions, even those that you're chayev l'kederach achilatan. That's what the Achiezer took for granted, making explicit that in terms of basar b'chalav as well, meaning until now, the Sisi Ezra had proof from various other prohibitions, and the Achiezer was one who applies it explicitly to basar b'chalav, to meat and milk and meat, even though they have this special quality of shelo k'der achilatan, as long as it doesn't go down one's throat, one is not mechayev. Now, Sisi Ezra does not pursue this element of it, but it's a wide-ranging area of permissibility. Like I said before, it means that it would suggest that caplets aren't an issue because they don't go, because they're whatever the prohibition is covered in a sieve, and then it's okay. There, it might be the lach only pator, but it means that people are willing to, you know, have you ingest various things through suppositories or through IVs, through intravenous things, which we wouldn't do for health reasons unless we need to, but all sorts of things. Then it means that people who have colostomy bags or whatever they have, who can get their food in. That takes waste out. I apologize. That's the wrong thing. But if people had some way to directly ingest, to directly insert food into their stomachs, that would be allowed in halacha. So that seems to me that it could open up many, many doors that aren't yet open, but that would be worth thinking about in the future. In any case, yeah, it's for our situation. The question obviously isn't to cook basar and milk and meat together. That you certainly can't do. It's to put them into the stomach at once, or one right after the other. I think what he means here is that it's clearly not going to be true that either one of them is hot enough to cook anything, because if they're that hot, then they could burn the stomach. You wouldn't do that, right? You'd put them in, and you'd let them get digested, and you wouldn't worry about it, so that you don't have to worry about the cooking, because cooking milk and meat together is also prohibited. And the cooking part doesn't need where it goes in or doesn't go in. It doesn't need to be ingested at all, meaning, like I mentioned before, let's say you have a kid who wants to go to culinary school. That person can't cook pasta b'chalav, can't cook milk and meat together, even if he or she is going to throw it out. Right? Let's say they say, I'm not going to let any of my fellow non-Jewish students eat it, even though they're allowed to eat pasta b'chalav, because that way I'm not getting any benefit from it. I'm just cooking it and throwing it out. Doesn't matter. You're not allowed to do that. So here, too, there's no problem of cooking, because you're not cooking it. It's putting it in the thing, one after the other. And then he says, v'chomzeh, in situations like this, it's not, the prohibition would have only been derabanan, right? There is a rabbinic prohibition against having milk and meat together in non-cooking ways. That's why, for example, that's one of the reasons perhaps why we wait between milk and meat, because we're worried about it getting all together, right? Why we don't have cold milk and meat together, that's a derabanan, not a d'oraita. D'oraita, the problem is milk and meat that have been cooked together. So they say, well, I want to have cold cuts. I want to have a cold cut sandwich with a slice of American cheese in it. So that is prohibited at a rabbinic level. It doesn't mean it's not prohibited. It's prohibited at a rabbinic level. So in those situations, if the prohibition would only be derabanan, so I'm going to put, you know, I'm going to put turkey pastrami slices along with cheese in this person's stomach, the halacha is passing in Yeridea 87, that pasta b'chalav, if it's not asur min haTorah, if it's not prohibited by Torah law, you're allowed to do it, you're allowed to benefit from it, even derabanan. So that would mean that if somebody had a store, let's say, and they were going to sell basar b'chalav that's not cooked together, so it's not prohibited to right the level, that would seem to be permissible because it's a benefit, it's allowed to, you're allowed to get benefit, mi derabanan. And the Taz and the Shach there agree, and it turns out therefore that means in our situation, then there's no question of him getting benefit from basar b'chalav because it's only a basar b'chalav derabanan. So we're going to put the meat and milk into the person's stomach. We're going to do it in a way that for us to ingest would be prohibited derabanan, but since it's prohibited derabanan, they did not create a prohibition of benefit. So the benefit the patient gets is fine, and there's no cooking, and there's no eating. The question was eating, and with the eating, he says no eating because it doesn't go to the throat. And therefore, he thinks in this situation, there's no prohibition of mixing them together, and so therefore, there's no need to wait at all between them, and therefore, when they want to put the food into the stomach, whatever they want to put in, as long as they're not actually cooking it, should be okay. Now, I just did a quick check of other tshuvot written on this day, but there aren't that many, as far as I could find. So we'll stop here. There are other tshuvos for this day, but they're all also long, and I thought this was an interesting one for us to consider and to be involved with. So this is our response of the day for the 23rd of Tishrei, for Isru Chag, for the day after Shmini Atzeret. Rav Tzitzit Eliezer pointing out that eating and drinking in halacha would seem to be only by way of the throat, and therefore that feeding tubes and inserting food directly into the stomach seem not to have the same prohibitions of basar b'chalav, and maybe not even of Yom Kippur, and issues to be pursued further should occasion arise. Have a great day.